So basically, strange, interesting Gemara. Okay, you could say it's like about the how mitzvahs and Torah protect the person. Okay, so the context is strange. There's such a thing as a phenomenon called the sota. It's a woman who is suspected of having an affair. So the procedure is that, are you familiar with this, Larry? The procedure is that you basically have her go to the Beis Mikdash and she drinks water.
She explodes.
Yeah, and tests her whether she's innocent or not. So if she's guilty, she explodes. So now the Mishnah says, though, that if she has a zechus, if she has a merit, then the merit could hold off her punishment for up to 3 years. Okay? They like protect her. So even though she's guilty, she might still have a delayed punishment, okay, for up to 3 years.
Okay.
So the Gemara asks, it says, what zechus, what merit is it that will protect her in this way? Okay? Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says, perhaps you'll argue it's the merit of learning Torah. Okay? Because we know, we'll see soon, Torah is like the most protective type of thing. The Gemara says it can't be, though, because she's not commanded to learn Torah. Okay, and since she's not commanded, we know that a person who does something when they're not commanded to does get reward, but not the same reward. Okay, and the Gemara seems to be assuming at this point that the reward of doing something as an Eina Metzuva is not commanded is not going to be sufficient to cut it, to protect her. Okay, so what then is the reward? What then does it mean that will protect her from blowing up? Right? So Gemara says it must be the reward of a mitzvah. It's the reward of a mitzvah. Okay? So Gemara says, hold on. Do mitzvahs really protect the person that much? Okay? Do mitzvahs really protect the person that much? Okay? Because there's a statement that the Torah compares ner mitzvah with Torah or. It says like the mitzvahs is is the candle, the mitzvahs are like a candle, and the Torah is like light, like the sun, okay? And which indicates that there's basically like a candle. Gemara gives an example of a guy who's going in the dark. So he has a candle, and he's not going to trip on thorns, and he's not going to fall into holes, but he's still, robbers might come to get him, right? And he may, whatever, but then when it comes dawn, well, now robbers aren't going to come, wild animals aren't going to come because it's light. So the Torah is a candle. Mitzvah is like a candle. It protects you to some extent. But the Torah is like light. It protects you much more. Okay? So it says, so the premise is that Torah is, that's like a given here. Okay? In this sugya, we're going to have to analyze what these things mean. What's protection altogether talking about? But it's basically saying is Torah protects a person more than mitzvah. Okay? So it's saying is, so
learning Torah.
Learning Torah, yes. Torah means learning Torah, right. Exactly. So Gemara wants to know, so what is it that, so given that Torah is more than mitzvah, so then how could it be that mitzvah is going to be sufficient to protect her? So the Gemara says, no, it's still okay. And this is what Rav Yosef says. There's going to be two or three rabbis. So we're going to start with Rav Yosef. And he says like this, is that a mitzvah, So the Gemara says like this. What's the difference? There's two concepts. There's protecting you from punishments, and then there's saving you from sinning. Okay? Two different things. There's protecting you from punishments, which is akin to the sota blowing up, and then there's saving you from sinning. Okay? Okay. And there's two variables. There's mitzvah and there's Torah. And then there's another variable is protecting you while you're doing the mitzvah or while you're learning Torah versus even after you finish doing the mitzvah or learning Torah, that the benefit, the protection might still exist. Okay? So let me get particular. So Rabbi Yosef says the mitzvah protects you while you're doing a mitzvah, it's going to protect you from being punished and it's going to save you from sinning. Okay? Both. But when you're no longer doing it, it will still protect you from punishment, but it's not going to stop you from sinning. Okay? So again, so mitzvah always protects you from punishments, and that's why the sota will be protected, because she does mitzvahs, and the mitzvahs will protect you from punishment. But mitzvah will not be able to protect you from sinning, but when you're doing it. When you're doing the mitzvah, while you're doing the mitzvah, typically a person doesn't sin while they're doing a mitzvah. So it'll protect you. But after you finish doing the mitzvah, it's not going to protect you from sinning anymore. Okay? But Torah is superior in that regard. Torah protects you whether you're doing it while you're learning or after you learn. Both. The Torah will protect you from punishment, just like mitzvah does. And it will also protect you from sinning. Even, not only while you're learning, but even after you're learning. Okay? That is the position of Rav Yosef. Okay? Okay. So, the Gemara is going to bring another position, but maybe we should keep things simple and try to analyze this before it just gets, there's a lot of variables here, so I think it will just be helpful to keep it simple. So, what is the logic of Rav Yosef? First of all, what there's the discrepancy. Let's start with what's discrepant about them. They both will protect the person from sinning while you're involved in them. But mitzvah will only protect you while. It will not protect you after. But Torah, learning, will protect the person even after they finish learning. Protect the person from sinning. Okay? Again, so they'll both guard you from, both guard you from punishments, whatever, but they'll forget punishments for the time being. Let's just sin. So it's saying is mitzvah prevents you from sinning only while you're doing it. But Torah even prevents you from sin after you finish. Alright? So could we explain that? Justify that? Sounds familiar?
It's cheating allowed.
Nice. Cheating. I don't know. How far did he get?
In school?
No, we'd discuss this at Shabbos.
Oh.
The first half of what we're going to discuss, now we discuss. How about cheating will be allowed after that? You go last. Okay?
I don't even know if I have the same exact idea as what you said.
Okay, you don't remember. You don't remember exactly.
I remember I had the same idea as the last time you said it. Okay. Not if you said it too, though.
Okay. Okay. Right, so what do you say? How is it that they both protect you from sinning during? Right? How is it that they both protect you from sinning during? But afterwards, the mitzvah doesn't protect you afterwards, but Torah does protect you afterwards.
Is learning Torah a mitzvah also?
Yes. It is. The biggest. Yeah, so how does it protect you from sinning? How about during? How does it protect you from sinning during? How do they both protect you from sin during?
Like you said before, if you're in the middle of a mitzvah,
okay.
It almost seems like counterintuitive that you're going to be sinning
right.
While you're in the midst of performing the mitzvah.
Right, okay.
That doesn't mean it's impossible.
Right, so it's possible, but your energies are involved in higher things. In general, to keep a person away from sin.
That's like the candle case that you kind of described. And it seemed intuitive that somebody's gone with the candle, so you're able to see where you're going. You're kind of focused on what you're doing.
Right. Okay.
It doesn't mean that nothing else can kind of come in the way. And,
A
robber could come.
Right. Okay.
It seems like kind of the instincts are sort of already channeled in a certain direction.
Okay, good.
It would take something else to sort of trigger them and interrupt from what you're doing.
Okay, good. Good. Okay, good. Okay, now what about afterwards?
That's what's hard. Like, it would seem that, if you're doing a mitzvah, it's conceivable that your instincts are still kind of redirected, and, why does it have... And according to Rav Yosef, it sounds like it's a fleeting thing. Like, okay... You focused your energies in a certain way, and your instincts were directed toward Torah or mitzvos. So, And as soon as you're done with the mitzvah, that effect is gone. You're back to square one.
Sounds like that's what he's saying.
It does sound that way.
But Torah not. So why? What's the difference between Torah and mitzvah?
I mean, seemingly the effect is more... It makes sense in terms of the impact of an idea, right? I mean, the idea can actually change your entire understanding. I mean, again, like, always? I mean...
Well, I don't know if the things are always, but...
I mean, like, you know, there's different levels of learning.
Yeah.
Like, okay, if this person just, you know, is learning something, it doesn't really affect their personality.
Right. Okay. Okay, go on. Yes, what are you going to say?
So, I think by sin... It's like you're doing while you're involved. It's like it's a little hypocritical for you to be sinning while you're involved.
Right.
But when you're done, it's like a Rasha even could like do a mitzvah.
Right. Okay.
But he's still a Rasha. He's going to sin after.
Okay.
Even if he does a few mitzvahs.
Okay. But learning.
But learning, it's like a whole way of life to learn Torah. It's like Torah is like a ideology and philosophy.
Right. Okay.
Usually, if you learn it, you're going to stick with it.
Okay.
No, yeah. People can multitask. People what? People can multitask, I think.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I think in a main way, saying is mitzvah engages your energies in avodas Hashem, in serving God. And so far as you're engaged in serving God, so generally a person is not going to be doing involved in sin. And Torah does that also. But Torah also is knowledge. It's knowledge, and knowledge is a transformative of the personality. When you gain knowledge, when you engage your mind in ideas, so it has the capacity, in general, of course, there's different, you know, it doesn't have to every single time, but it has the capacity to enlighten the person and to inform him and to give him insight and knowledge about the world and about himself. And the process of a person who's a Ben Torah, who learns Torah, becomes knowledgeable about the world, and that impact lasts beyond the action of learning. Mitzvah it engages you in the moment, but it doesn't enlighten you. It doesn't have insight. It's an involvement, and activity is great, and it's valuable to be involved in mitzvahs all the time. But it doesn't have the same impact because it's not deep. It doesn't create an impact on the personality because it's an action. But the knowledge you carry with you even after you finish learning. So therefore its nature is that it will protect you from sinning even beyond the involvement itself, because it creates an impact on your mind. Right? Yeah. Okay. So, but, yeah.
Mitzvahs are fundamentally different in that way?
Yes. Yes. Mitzvahs are fundamentally different in that I think they impact a person while they're doing them. He's thinking about God. But it's not, like a person who does mitzvahs, I mean, maybe if you learn, maybe doing mitzvahs participates in that. But it's talking about like a person who has mitzvahs and not Torah, saying the mitzvahs themselves are actions. A person who does mitzvahs never learns. So let's take that example. Someone does mitzvahs, all the mitzvahs would never learn. So, I mean, it has some impact on your personality that, you know, you involve yourself in God, but it doesn't transform you without the insight. What transforms the person is the knowledge. So it might create certain patterns of behavior, but insofar as you're removed from that pattern, generally the impact is diminished. But the knowledge gives you insight, and insight is something you take with you. I mean, I'm not saying a mitzvah can't have any benefit whatsoever after the fact, but its nature is that it's a pattern of actions, and the pattern exists when you're in it, but afterwards it doesn't, you know, generally, not in the way Torah does, you know. Okay, so, but it's saying to protect you from punishment. It's saying that both mitzvah and Torah protect the person from. Right? Even afterwards. Right? Protect from, this is a divine punishment, like sota, like her blowing up. So what's that idea? It's saying is mitzvah, even afterwards, mitzvah does protect you from that. But why should that be? Like, what's the sense of this protection? What does this even mean, the protection? Right?
Yeah, what are you protected from?
Good question. I mean, in this case, you're protected from blowing up. Right?
But if she's in, like, I guess, according to this, if she's involved in mitzvos,
right,
like, it would protect her as long as she's doing mitzvos for 3 years. That's
right. Yeah, no, it's interesting. It only lasts for 3 years. It doesn't seem like it gives her scot-free forever. It just protects her for a certain amount of time. Yeah. It could be, as like, bottom line is, there has to be a punishment. She does deserve punishment, so it will shield her.
Well, she does tshuva.
Maybe. I'm not sure. Could be the waters. I don't know. Good question. It says up to 3 years, so it seems even... I don't know. Not sure if tshuva will help in this regard. So what's the sense of the protection? Right? Did you hear this part? I don't remember.
I don't think I did.
I mean, I would think punishment is to redirect the person back toward where, you know, the right path where he should be. So, if he's involved in mitzvah, then he's already directing his energies, I guess, in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So, what is the need for the punishment?
But here the punishment is killing her. In this instance, right?
Okay.
So, if she's not involved in mitzvahs, then you're saying is then she can get punished to blow up in order to direct her back in the right direction. Or she's going to die.
No, hopefully she'll do tshuva before that. Yeah.
But I mean, even if she does mitzvah, she'll do tshuva anyways before she dies. And it's funny because she did do a sin. I mean, she does mitzvahs, but after all, she did have an affair.
Right. So, just to clarify, so if she does mitzvahs, she's saved for
up to 3 years.
And how about Torah?
Torah? Well, no, Torah won't work for her because she's not commanded.
Oh.
That's for a different reason, which we have to get to. But for now, let's ignore that. But in theory, Torah, if you're assuming Torah, one is the commanded learning Torah, then yeah.
Well, maybe you could say, I don't know how you're going to work Torah into this. I don't really know how this, but because she did mitzvahs, given, I guess, like, the schus to be able to have time to do tshuva.
Okay.
I mean, I think going back to the question, like, okay, so how, you know, if a punishment, like, right, you know, dying is really a chance for a person to do tshuva, I mean, I think the answer is yes. You know, it sounds kind of intuitive because, right, okay, well, the person's dying.
At the moment, so, like, right.
But, you know, sort of, there's a somebody does something that's so egregious, right, you know, so serious, yeah, that they are high misa for, right, that's, you know, they have to sort of account for their actions, and they did a,
right,
like, clearly something that was
okay,
clearly,
but
wrong.
If they have mitzvah, then you mean then they don't need to as much or not less so they could get
no because it doesn't go away. The fact is delayed for a period of time. It's not just
okay,
like, okay, you know, they, right, die eventually, okay, but it seems that it's a fairly brief reprieve. I mean, 3 years is not, like, forever.
Okay good. So what's the point of the reprieve? Because it was like, why is mitzvahs give them this reprieve?
I mean, again, I guess clearly, so the objective is not, like, immediate death.
Okay.
So it's, okay, on the one hand, she's killed for the adultery that she did.
Right.
And at the same time, so she's given an existence for some longer period of time,
right,
to perfect herself,
right,
as much as she can.
Okay.
So
okay, good. I see. I see. You mean it's for her benefit. She's involved in mitzvos, so give her a chance to continue more. Stay, like delay her execution a little bit. To give her a chance to grow some more. Okay, I hear you. Yeah.
Maybe going like all the way. You could say that like doing a aver, I guess, going against like God, or like that whole ideology.
Right.
But clearly, she has some sort of connection to it still, because she does mitzvahs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So she's not totally
removed
from it. So I mean, she doesn't fully deserve to die, because she still has some sort of connection, at least for a short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's not fully connected.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So maybe it's similar to what you guys are saying, but a slightly different angle. Which is like this. Is imagine you got two people. One person who does a good tzaddikas, let's say. She does lots of mitzvahs, great mitzvahs, chesed, all that. And she ends up falling and has an affair. And then you have another person who basically is just a corrupt person. Everything about her is corrupt. And she has an affair. So, should those two people be treated equally? Right? So...
Well...
Yeah.
Is it in terms of the punishment for having an affair, or...?
Well, that's what saying is, yes. But the question is the punishment simply, like, single-dimensional? One-dimensional? But you say, like, punishment, it's true she deserves punishment. But to say that, like, all the mitzvahs she does don't make a difference whatsoever, and she just gets the same exact punishment, whether she did it or didn't, you know, the rest of her life. So what it's saying is that that's not really God's system of justice. God's system of justice takes into account various factors. And while it's true she did a sin which has capital punishment, and she's going to be killed, but at the same time, it's like God's system of din, of judgment, measures different factors. And it should be clear to observers even that her mitzvah's paid off. It's true she's dying, but at the same time, God's delaying her dying because there's a balance and she has good things about her as well, as opposed to just an adulteress, and that's her personality and that's her nature. Well, then she's going to have, that's like the strict, that factor alone. If that's her whole personality, then she doesn't deserve death right away. Yeah.
Why is this only by this case? What about a big tzaddik who one day just kills someone? Why isn't he?
Yeah, good question.
For 3 years.
So maybe you're right. But the thing is, like, it's like there's two things. There's God's justice and there's man's justice. So man can't decide these things. So Bezdin has to kill a person today. We don't know whether a person's tzaddik or not tzaddik. We can't weigh these things and measure out.
So we're just going to assume that we're going to kill
So the point of this court basically is you kill a person right away. We can't start making these judgments. So we know who's Chayav Misa, and the mitzvah is. The halachic system can't, like, has to just measure the crime which is committed. Because judges can't measure a person's personality. Hashem can measure a person's personality. But when Hashem gives a system of justice for human beings to carry out, then we have to isolate and just the din itself. But God's mishpat incorporates the whole world and all the different factors. So this is the one punishment, which is like concrete punishment, which is actually carried out by God in a miraculous fashion. So it's saying is, in this punishment, there is a delay based upon her other zechuyos, her other mitzvahs, her other Torah, whatever. Because after all, Hashem commanded her do all these mitzvahs, and she did. And now, therefore, she's going to deserve and to reward for it. But maybe, to begin to answer the Torah, God didn't say learn Torah. She's not commanded to learn Torah. A woman isn't commanded. So it's saying is, this framework of reward, you don't say, well, she did all these mitzvahs, all the things Hashem told her to do, now she's going to get rewarded. Well, why? Because she learned Torah. She says Hashem didn't tell her to learn Torah. So it's nice that she did, and maybe it benefits her personality, but at the same time, this is an idea, insofar as like the observers, it should be manifest and clear that a person who's involved in mitzvahs, who follows the commandments of God, attains benefit. And therefore, God differentiates in the punishment of the person who's followed his will and the person who hasn't followed his will. And but if she learned Torah on her own, not as a commandment, but just because she likes doing it and she thinks it benefits her, maybe it does benefit her. But in terms of this framework of Mishpat, it's like, it's for the observer, there should be a discrepancy between the punishment of the you know, the sinner who mad who's openly doing mitzvah, so the person following God's will and not following God's will should have a difference.
Well, how does that fit with what you said earlier, that it's, you know, it's sort of based on the level of the person? Just because she's not mitzvah, I mean, you know, she could be tremendous based on her learning.
Right. So, there's two frameworks. There's a framework of the observer, and then a framework of, like, the justice of their soul. I'm suggesting that this position is looking so far as the observer is concerned. Mm-hmm. And so far as saying is the observer should see a difference between a woman who's an adulteress, a woman who's a tzaddikas, but an adulteress shouldn't blow up instantaneously. That's going to look bad for tzaddikas in the world, and it's going to be... There's this whole view... is trying to teach people. Sota is, part of Sota is to teach people, don't do this type of thing. It's a deterrent. Mm-hmm. And that appearance should differentiate between a person who's a tzedekes who slipped up versus a person who's generally a bad person. So what people know and what the observers goes by, how much has she followed the mitzvahs, the commandments of Hashem. The fact that she learns Torah on her own, but Hashem didn't command her to learn Torah. So it might be in terms of her soul, though Torah has impacted her greatly. But that's not what this delay is for. This delay is for the fact that she's following, according to Rav Yosef, is for the fact that she's following the Torah. That people see that she's listening to the commands that Hashem gave her. Yeah.
But to the observer,
yeah,
someone's either they're gonna see this. Either she's going to blow up and they're going to think she's guilty.
Right.
She's not going to blow up and they're going to think she's not guilty.
No, but then she's going to blow up in 3 years and they say, whoa.
Is that how she dies?
Yeah.
She's walking down the street one day and boom.
Blows. Yeah. Pop.
I mean...
Why, is that so much harder for you to understand than if it happens on the spot? Yeah.
But my point.
Down the street? No, that's weird. In the base of Mikdash? Oh, I understand.
No, my point is, though...
Yeah, it will be noticeable. I think
no,
so.
No, but... You think...
I think that's the halacha. Yeah, they'll notice it. They'll make the connection. That's what's happening. She dies in a specific manner. Okay. Her body, her legs swell, or this. It's a whole process.
That never happens otherwise?
No.
I haven't seen a lot of different types of...
No. No, I don't think so. I think it's a specific type of dying. And I think that will still happen. Yeah. Her face turns blue, her eyes poke out, gets her veins start popping out. It's messy. Yeah. Okay, so let's see the next position, okay? I mean, I think some of you have seen these positions in contrast. So here's the problem. That was Rabbi Yosef. Now, Rabbi asks a problem. You're claiming that Torah protects a person from sinning, even after you finish sinning, even after you finish learning. But there's a problem. There are two of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim ever, or I think ever, in their generations, were Doeg and Achitofel. One of which was a Rebbe to David HaMelech. The other was also a great advisor to, I forget exactly. But the point is, they're two very great people. Great Talmidei Chachamim, who were the greatest Torah minds of their generation. And they were Rishonim. They were evil. They were Rishonim. Okay? They were Rishonim. Okay. Known to be Rishon. So, but they learned Torah. So apparently Torah doesn't protect a person from sinning. So how could you, Rav Yosef, claim that Torah protects a person from sinning, right? Even after you finish learning, but you see these two great people, great learners, or evil people. So he's saying is, I don't buy what you're saying, Rav Yosef. That the Torah protect learning Torah protects a person from sinning.
Wait, is learning protection from sinning a magical result, or because you will gain
knowledge.
So much knowledge,
right,
you will not sin as a result of the knowledge
yes.
acquired?
Yes, the latter.
So then, if it's the latter, then I would say, I don't know, are these two rabbis learning it just sort of intellectually?
Yeah.
And learning it, and absorbing it, and being committed to what you're learning, think there is a distinction, but I don't know.
Yeah.
You said they were like common.
No. Well, yeah. Good question, but that's his attack. Okay. I mean, you know, Rav Yosef knew about them also, and we're going to have to defend it. Yeah. Maybe Rav Yosef will just say they're exceptions or something. We have to take that out. But that's his question. Okay. So therefore, he basically says, Rav Yosef says, that learning does not protect the person from sinning because of them. Okay. Now, if that's the problem, now the case is, now what's the difference between learning and mitzvah now? Because you said mitzvah doesn't protect you from sinning, and learning doesn't protect you from sinning, and they're both protecting you from punishment because of the sota. So then what's the difference between learning and, we know there's a difference between learning and mitzvah.
How do we know that?
Near mitzvah of the Torah, or Torah is like a candle, and learning is right, whatever, that's what we know. That's not possible.
Isn't that question then that, you see they learned Torah and they weren't protected, doesn't that contradict the Pasuk?
Well, no, it only contradicts the Pasuk if you say that this is the discrepancy between, we have to find a different discrepancy between learning and, but the Torah doesn't tell you exactly what the discrepancy is, the Pasuk, so we have to figure out what maybe there's a different discrepancy. So here's what Rabba's solution is, okay?
Is this somebody else?
Yes, this is the one who attacks, or Rava, the one who attacks Rav Yosef. So this is his solution. Because he rejects this problem, because of Dogen Achitofel, he says Torah doesn't protect you. Okay? So he says, Torah, while you're learning it, protects you from sinning and protects you from punishment. Okay? But when you're not learning it from it, it doesn't protect you from sinning. It still protects you from punishment. But mitzvah never protects you from sinning. In other words, according to Rava, Torah doesn't protect you when you're not learning. When you finish learning, it's not going to protect you. Like Doeg, Achitofel. But while they're learning, they're protected. While you're learning, you're protected. But mitzvah, even while you're doing a mitzvah, it doesn't protect you from sinning. Okay? So the difference between Torah and learning, Torah and mitzvah, is while you're doing it. While you're learning, you're not going to sin. But while you're doing a mitzvah, you would. Mm-hmm. So Rav is arguing on Rav Yosef in two counts. First of all, whereas Rav Yosef said that learning protects a person from sinning even after he finishes learning, Rav is saying, no, that doesn't work. After you finish learning, it's not going to help you. Because Dorgan Achitofa. And regarding mitzvah, he says, you, Rav Yosef, was claiming mitzvah protects you from sinning while you're doing the mitzvah. Rav Yosef says, Rav says, no, that's not true. Mitzvah is, even while you're doing the mitzvah, you're not protected from sinning. Okay? So there are two dimensions here to this argument. Okay? And let's focus on one at a time. So learning. Again, according to Rav Yosef, learning protects you from sinning even after you finish. Right? Even after you finish learning, it protects you. But Rava says, no, it's not true. Dogen Achitofel, I'll show you that it's not true. It doesn't. Right? So question, does learning protect you from sin after you finish learning? Are Dogen Achitofel valid counterexamples or not? Right? So what is the question? What is the argument? What is it based upon conceptually? Does learning protect the person from sinning after they finish learning? Or not? How would you frame the question?
This part I remember.
This part you remember? Yeah?
The Plato verse.
Are you there for that part?
Yeah.
You remember how it works, how it fits? Oh, that's what you left in the middle of this, I think, no?
Did you say Plato?
Yeah.
Plato verse Aristotle.
Yeah. Plato verse Aristotle. But you guys can think for a minute.
I don't think I remember how it
fits. Okay, so just forget about that then. Just think, does learning protect you? Does learning protect you after you finish learning? Does it protect you from sinning? Yes or no? What would be the argument for or against?
Well, just to start, yes. I mean, not different from what you said. The same way we said Torah will protect you from sinning.
Right.
Before.
Right.
We could use the same idea.
Okay, which is?
That because of the whole...
The knowledge thing.
Right, the knowledge.
Right, I mean, because it gives you knowledge.
Knowledge.
Okay, good. Great. So presumably that was the real source argument. So what will Rava say to that? What will Rava say back to that? I have knowledge.
Well, those two rabbis that you mentioned.
Okay, good. So what's the theory? So what's the theory? They have knowledge.
Or.
But.
But there's still more shayim in there.
Okay, right. So you see, the knowledge doesn't quite help. Right?
Or you could say the knowledge helped, but man regresses.
Okay.
Like you make progress and then you slip back. You know, you have an idea and then it disappears.
Okay, but then the knowledge doesn't really, then the Torah doesn't really protect you from sinning.
Oh, that's for a short time.
Oh, right, afterwards. Yeah, during. He agrees, during.
No,
that's what he says.
No, it has some lasting effect.
Oh, how long?
Like 3 seconds.
I don't know how you can like stake out like a definite position, because like some ideas can affect a person very deeply, and other ideas they can affect you at the time, in a significant way, but it just sort of it fades.
Right, I hear you. Okay, keep asking us a couple of these. Yeah. Okay. So.
I don't know. Maybe somebody's on the level, but it affects them in a permanent way, and it progresses and stays and advances from there. I don't know.
Okay, so Plato had the following argument. Okay? Yeah? Plato maintained this follows. A person can't knowingly harm himself. Okay? A person doesn't do that. Why would you harm yourself? So he says is... Once a person does something which is harmful to himself, it must be because he doesn't think it's harmful. He thinks it's good for him. Right? Smoking. He thinks the pleasure is more worthwhile than the risk, and he doesn't really think the risk is all too real. It's not real to him. He doesn't really believe in it, or he thinks it's small chances, or he thinks it's not going to happen to him, or whatever. He thinks pleasure is the good in life, and he doesn't really have knowledge that it's bad for him. But if he really, really, really knew that it was bad for him, he knew himself, he knew his psyche, he had full knowledge of lungs and psychology and of medicine and of everything, then he would smoke, or he would do what's good for him. Okay? It always, every sin, according to Plato, comes from a lack of knowledge. Now, knowledge doesn't just mean as a fact. You have to deeply perceive the knowledge. The knowledge changes the person. Once you see clearly that that's bad for you, truly, then why would you do that? Right? So it always stems from a lack. Any sin or, stems from a lack of knowledge. Okay? And therefore, the solution to everything is ultimately knowledge. Now, you have to have deep, honest, soul-searching knowledge. But ultimately, knowledge, once you see an idea clearly, then you're going to have to act in line with it. All right? Now, therefore, I'll argue, this is in Rabbi Zimmer's connection, that Rav Yosef learns Torah prevents you from sinning. Because Torah is knowledge. And if you really have knowledge of Torah, then you're not going to sin. If you really see the ideas, then you're not going to sin. It'll prevent you from sinning. The knowledge transforms you. It gives you insight. You see that it's right. You see what's right and what's wrong. You're not going to do it. Right? Doeg and Achitofel. Apparently they didn't have knowledge in that area, like we were saying. Maybe there was some lack in knowledge regarding their own whatever. So yes, they were great Chachamim, but even a great Chachamim isn't infallible. It can make mistakes and doesn't necessarily know everything. So to the degree that a person has Torah, it protects you from sinning. But of course, that's why a person should always learn. There's always more Torah to learn. And the more you know, the more you'll be immune from the sun. So you can't show me a counterexample, because I'll always tell you that they didn't have knowledge in a particular area. Maybe they had a block to see something, or they didn't really investigate a particular problem or whatever it is. They lack knowledge. But ultimately, that's not a problem that Torah doesn't protect you from sinning. You just have to have enough Torah knowledge. And certain times, if you have a block in a certain area and you don't end up gaining that knowledge, well, then the results could be disastrous. Right? But ultimately, that's the Revelsive theory. That Torah is knowledge, gives you knowledge. Knowledge prevents you from sinning. Because once you see it, you're not going to do what's wrong. Okay? But Aristotle argued. Aristotle was Plato's Talmud. Right? Student. And he argued it's not true. He says a person can have absolute knowledge. Okay? You can have full knowledge that it's wrong. But a person has a mind. And a person also has instincts. And your mind could tell you it's bad for you. But your instincts say, but it will feel so good. Okay? And a person could choose to follow their instincts instead of their mind. Is it good for you? No. I know clearly with my mind, it's not. Doesn't matter though. My instincts still tell me it feels good, and it does. And a person could cave in. And there's caving in doesn't necessarily mean you don't have knowledge. Caving in means a person's instincts pull him, and you have free choice to select whether you want to follow your mind or your instincts. So if that's the case, Torah doesn't really prevent you from sinning. Because you can have all the Torah in the world, like Doeg and Achitofel, and they chose to sin. So he's arguing that it's not a lack, Doeg and Achitofel, that they had a lack in knowledge, but that they just chose incorrectly. And therefore he's saying, Torah doesn't really prevent you from sinning. What Torah does do is, at the moment, Torah does protect you from sinning. Because at the moment, the idea is perfectly... The way the instincts work is like they kind of distract you from the knowledge. And they distract you from the knowledge, and they say, forget the knowledge, pleasure, go with pleasure. They pull your energies away, and then, you know, while you're learning, the instincts can't hold sway, can't affect you in that way. While you have the knowledge is clear to you. That, even that side, Rava would agree. During the learning. But once the learning is done, then the instincts could make a move. And pull you, and cause you to ignore the knowledge. But again, while you're learning, he agrees it does protect you. Yes.
But then why wouldn't somebody? I'm sorry. So why wouldn't someone always succumb then to, you know, an extremely righteous person?
Oh.
Think through the knowledge would not succumb to.
Right.
There's a cheeseburger. I should eat it, but I'm going to eat it
right.
Because the knowledge that they have is
right.
Such that their intellect can prevent them from letting their instincts take control.
Good question. I guess it doesn't mean knowledge doesn't help. But it's just saying, ultimately, it doesn't prevent you. The knowledge does give you a good head start, and it shows you why it's wrong. And then in general, it will work. In general, you'll be better off than the guy who doesn't have the knowledge. But ultimately, if you get yourself in the wrong situation, you could sin. Whereas the first side said, even if you're in the wrong situation, if you have all the knowledge in the world, you're not going to sin, because you know it. The second way of saying is, the knowledge, while it's powerful, at the same time, if the instincts get you in a powerful way, it could distract you and it could throw you off.
So, if you're like Plato, that you're only going to sin if you don't have full knowledge.
Right.
Doesn't that destroy the whole entire concept of Bechira?
No, maybe the Bechira is going to be to get the knowledge.
What's Bechira?
Choice, free choice. Like, in other words, you have resistances to working through an area. So your Bechira might be to fight through your instincts, your eyes to knowledge. So you might have to be able to... You may have to really, you know, with knowledge, be able to make strides towards gaining new knowledge and overcoming your instincts, which prevent you from gaining more knowledge.
But really, you just don't have the knowledge, so you don't really understand that new knowledge will be good for you.
Okay.
Right. It's the endless cycle.
Right, but it could be the bechira is in using your mind to help you fight, you know, push through to gain more and more and more knowledge.
Like there is instincts. You don't know that gaining more knowledge is good for you.
Oh.
You don't fully understand why it's good for you.
That's true. It could be that's... Maybe you have an intuition that that's true. And then you have to... Like, the Bechira is in pursuing that path. It's like... Let's just say a person could
it's
have
just an
sense.
Intuition. If all it is an intuition, then it doesn't matter. Like, okay, I think so, but I'm not going to... It's not a Bechira choice.
Well, it could be your mind. You could know something. You can know something not clearly. But you can know it in like a... Like, let's say you can know that Torah is true. Like I think it might be you have to like the knowledge has to be in a full way. So you might know something is true from like a secondhand source, and that could tell you that it's right, but it still won't move you until you really know it in a firsthand way. Like you might know it's not good for you to eat trays because you know the Torah is true, you know Hashem said so. But if you don't, and therefore you have a choice to say, am I going to eat trays or am I not going to eat trays? But you could choose to pursue that knowledge to the nth degree so that you know it to the highest level.
No, but you don't know that. That's good for you.
No, you know, there's different levels of knowledge. What he's saying is, like, you can know something, again, you can know something because you know Hashem said so. And you know that it's true. But what he's saying is that the knowledge prevents you from sinning. I think he means, like, a full knowledge.
Of that particular area that you...
Yes, of that particular area, and of your instincts in that area, and of the draw, you know, the particular draws of the area, and why it's pulling you, and why it's not really truly satisfying, and like a deep, full knowledge of the thing. To the degree that you really know it, you know the human being and the personality, that's when you can. Maybe, look, maybe the free will is before that point. Maybe Ein Hachanami, once you have all that knowledge, then maybe you don't have free will anymore in that regard. You fully see that, maybe that's not the free will. You already, maybe that's a better answer. What he's saying is, look, until you get to that point of knowledge, then you have to have free will. But once you gain the knowledge, then you lost the freedom. Now you're just going to do it right because you know it's, you know.
And it's a permanent change in the person?
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
That never.
Right.
Like once you achieve that knowledge,
right.
It's.
Right.
It's,
once the idea is clear.
It's
right. Right. And that's the plate of intents. That's the mahogany.
What about forget? No one forgets anything?
I don't know. Maybe if you get amnesia or something like that. But I think an idea is clear. That's why Moscow talks like this a lot.
So basically
now.
No one ever had a clear idea
there's
ever.
No going back. What?
So basically no one ever had a clear idea ever?
No, some people don't. If you get an idea, then you don't have to go back. Like that's what he says. Like, you know, there's like, for instance, it's like, is Moshe Feinstein going to eat a cheeseburger one day? He knows. Can you eat a cheeseburger one day?
Oh.
It's like he's not even a question for him. He knows it's wrong. It's not good for you. It's not something he's interested in. He knows this is totally
an extreme
true.
Example, though.
You're right. But these are extreme examples. I'm saying you're right. Plato's just saying a person who has real, deep, true knowledge. It is extreme. But that's the question is, to the degree that a person has knowledge, it protects a person from sin. So in the extreme case, you could see it better. But those are very rare. But to the degree, the point is Torah protecting you from sin means to the degree that a person has knowledge, he becomes protected from sin. Of course, it has gradations. But the other side says, no, it doesn't. Even if you have the knowledge, it might make it easier, but ultimately a person could get distracted and the sin could take over. All the knowledge notwithstanding, it doesn't matter.
It's interesting to me that Plato didn't take into consideration like addictions. Which I don't think someone that is engaging in a sin, you know, or
right.
Like you said, smoking,
right.
Isn't because he doesn't have the knowledge. It may be that he truly cannot.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's different.
Maybe
I mean,
what?
You're talking about when somebody's in the threat already, like, in, right? A person who's addicted has to take the first step at some point, right? Somebody has to eat. Be addicted to, let's say, cheeseburgers, and they have to at least, you know, they have
get to that point.
Yeah, they have to have the cheeseburger in the first place.
Yeah, good question. I mean, there are people who break addictions, though.
Yeah.
So, arguably, you could have, maybe he'll argue, the person who's able to break it is the person who gains the knowledge. Like what 12-step programs are about educating the person. And if you truly educate the person, then that gives the person the ability to pull out of it. So you could argue that the person who doesn't understand the addiction is not ever going to be able to get out of it. person who really understands it well and understands why it's bad and understands the harm that it's doing to his life and acknowledges it and is honest with himself, and that's arguably what the 12 steps is about. It's a true knowledge and a realization of what's bad about it. And so far as you have that, then you pull free. So even addictions, I don't think, I mean, your average person doesn't gain real knowledge. The claim is a person who is a real philosopher and truly gains full knowledge of it will be able to pull, you know. Well, yeah, it could be certain things are physically impossible. I mean, I don't know, maybe like an addiction could be to the point where a person's mind is altered, and then I don't know if they, you know, maybe you're not capable of gaining knowledge. It could be addiction could be so extreme that you become so blinded where, you know, I assume such a chemical, the chemicals of your brain can make certain knowledge impossible, you know. I don't know, maybe that's different. But in general, I'm saying is even despite addictions, people do break out of them. And arguably, it's the people who become enlightened with some sort of knowledge. You know, yeah.
So when someone kills, doesn't see them like such a bad sin if the only thing they're doing wrong is not really truly understanding what's so bad about killing. Not 100% fully understanding every last detail of what's bad about sin.
No, this is
bad.
No. No, I'm just saying is that if a person does fully understand, then they're not going to sin. But if they don't fully understand, then they have to do it because their mind tells them that it's wrong, see the harm, but they don't understand it in the fullest depth.
Okay, so this sounds like such a bad sin. That, no, because if they knew right, then they would have free will.
No, they could see that. No, they could see that it's destructive, let's say, to the world. It's very bad, it harms other people, it's harmful to the world. They could see why am I better than the other guy. Mm-hmm. They could see that it's terrible. It just doesn't mean like, okay, but maybe it's good for me to be self-centered and maybe that's good. How do I know that that's not good? Maybe it'll make me happier and maybe it won't be good. Maybe it's good for me to kill everyone else in order to make me happy. So the person has to understand that that's not good for him.
So what's a worse thing to what the other definition of just killing someone? Or someone thinking that really it's good to be self-censored. So it seems like a lot less of a sin if you just think that it's good for you to be self-censored.
Well,
and you could tie that into a lot of other affairs, so you get a lot
true.
Worse punishment.
That's true.
A lot
I guess
less.
The question is, though, is when you have this theory, the question is how far are you willing to go with your theory? Like, you might, a part of you says it's good to be self-centered, but another part of you recognizes other people. And you know, you may, one person might recognize other people to the point that they're a little bit, they recognize them, but they'll steal from the other guy. Another person is so convinced of his, you know, importance in the world that he can actually go and kill somebody else. So there's like the degree of the sin is like how far are you willing to go? Like a person has conflict, and then how convinced are you? So, you know, you might be willing to steal from him, but you're not going to kill him. Why not? Well, I think I'm more important than him, but I'm not really that sure about it. I'm not going to go that far. I see that that's a major, you know. So there's like, there's balance, there's a conflict.
And that's really the sin of killing, he's saying? His thing is...
I mean, it's like becoming, it's putting more credence, more commitment into your belief system. It's like you're believing your emotional attitude more. Like you're acting in line with it, and you're giving it more credence than the other guy. The guy who kills is giving that belief of his own self-importance ultimate sway in his actions, and he's carrying it through to the fullest extent. Hitler is taking his belief that he's the greatest, and he's just changing the entire world because of his personal view. So he's like giving more reality to that. Every person, like let's say part of them feels like I'm the most important thing in the world, but like, you know, you feel that way, but you're not gonna, you don't believe it the way Hitler believed it. Hitler made it his philosophy and lived by it in a way that he took that feeling that people have to its fullest conclusion, despite the fact that other things tell him that he's just another person.
Well, isn't that the best way to do it? If you really have...
If you have evidence that it's true.
Right, but once you...
But he doesn't.
But once you believe that something is fully true, best way to...
Yes, if you have... Well, it depends if you have evidence for it. But if it's really just based on a feeling that you have, then you have no evidence for it. And if any of the contrary, the evidence goes against it. But you're denying the evidence and you're just grabbing hold of your belief because you want it, makes you feel good, well, then I'd say it's evil. I'd say that the evil person is a person who gives ultimate reality to his wish against his mind. The good person is the person who gives ultimate reality to his mind against his wishes.
So someone that's dumb that kills a lot of people, it's just like, okay, whatever.
Well, it depends. I mean, if he's insane, like he has an insanity plea.
No, he's just not so smart.
Well, honestly, maybe it's less evil than a person who's a great person than Hitler who does it than just I'm a dumb guy. A guy who's smart. He understands it, and he has knowledge, and he's maybe more evil than a gang member. You know, maybe Hitler is a great, more evil than a gang member. You know, like, that's certainly a reasonable argument. He has knowledge. I mean, it depends. I mean, these things are, you know, you have to, you know, I don't know. There's
okay.
It's an area to go into. You know, we're not solving every problem here. But yeah, okay, yeah.
So. Would you say, I guess you would say, according to Plato, every idea that you've really had solid in your mind is going to be durable. It's always going to be something.
Right.
If you understand,
right.
you know,
right.
any chait that you
yeah, right.
that you've studied, yeah. then you're never going to be over that.
Right, I think so. Right. But again, it has to have real knowledge. Man, maybe you also have to have knowledge of the emotions which may come and undermine it. See, that's the only difference. You may have knowledge of, let's say you have knowledge of that why it's bad for you, but you don't have knowledge of the psyche which you attain when you turn 60 years old. And like when you turn 60 years old, you get a fear of death, and you don't have knowledge about the way death plays into things. So you might have knowledge.
I'm looking forward to my birthday in August.
So you may have knowledge of, you know, you may have knowledge of certain particulars, but then there may be new situations that arise that might even ever been analyzed. So maybe a new situation might come up, but you didn't fully gain knowledge of. So it depends.
So I mean, if the point
something might change.
If the point here is that Torah will, you know, can protect the person.
Right.
When we're talking about a sota, so you're not talking then about.
Sota is a different thing. Sota is different. Sota is discussing the punishment.
Mm-hmm.
That's already the other issue. This is discussing the preventing you from sinning. This is like, this is coming up parenthetically, but the sota is really the other aspect of preventing you from being punished.
So I guess it's
preventing you from sinning.
It's in a, I mean, I don't know, perhaps uncommon, profound way of understanding of.
Yes. Of listen to Rabbi Moskowitz's shiurim. Have you ever listened to them? He talks like this. You get an idea clear.
Moskowitz.
Clear, you get an idea clear in every facet, everything, whatever, then you never make the mistake again.
Does he have that idea clear?
Yes, I think that he does. But that's, he talks like that. And, you know, it's that's what he's into, really, focusing on getting an idea clear as day to the point where you see it. Every angle, every side, every emotion. I mean, it's
not he does that himself.
You mean he gives shiurim like that, and he talks in his shiurim like that. He talks about that way of living his life. He does mishlei. That's like his thing.
What's mishlei?
Mishlei is proverbs, but it's like studying like decisions in life, consequences.
Sounds like very interesting.
Very fascinating. But that's so that he that's part of something. He talks about that. He says that when I see an idea clearly from every which way. Then I won't make that mistake again.
So you know what I could... This is just... it's irrelevant.
It's the king of rational
thought. Slight digression. Like, I'm always, my whole life, fighting my weight. And
right.
I look at some of these rabbis, like...
Right.
Even these, like, scholarly rabbis that are...
Right.
Speaking our shul and everything. Right. Geniuses.
Right.
And really, really respected, right. written a million right. books. But they're 400 pounds.
Right.
When I think the Torah says you should, like, you know...
Right.
Whatever, take care of your body or
right.
be healthy. Like, I don't get that. Does that mean that they probably just...
You know, I don't know. It's hard for us to judge for other people.
Yeah.
You know, different people have different challenges, you know. I'm sure you have different challenges with your weight than I do. Different people have different metabolism, different whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, but to the point of if you're an incredible, like, Tom Puff, I mean, you...
But, you know, still. First of all, again, there's different metabolisms, different challenges, different psychologies, different, you know. And, like,
yeah.
No person is infallible. So this might be his area of weakness, you know.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's something which is noticeable, But, you know, what's the difference in the one guy has a weight problem, another guy has a lashon hara problem, another guy has this problem? Just weight is the thing, which you can notice. And like everyone has areas of sin. You know, another guy has a problem which you don't even know about, which is an ego problem. Another guy has this problem. You know, so there's different problems. No person, every person has his own vices. This vice is, you know, and again, this is also so largely based on metabolism. I don't think I could be 400 pounds if I wanted to. You know, it's just like there's the reality that, you know, right? I mean, most people who struggle with weight from the time they're very little. It's not, you know, it's not like something that, it's not like that guy eats 8 times as much as me. Sure or not, you know? It could be that for him, if he wants to not weigh 400 pounds, he has to control himself 8 times as much as me. Because it is natural, you know? So, you know, look, I'm not to say that if you were the highest level perfect in this area, you would be thin. Maybe. You know, but whatever. Who is the highest level in any area? So, you know.
Exactly. That's why I have Plato's
idea. Yeah, no, it's an ideal. It's an ideal. I'm not saying it isn't Plato's point. The point is that the degree, it lends itself to degrees. The degree which you gain knowledge, you avoid sin. That's what the claim is. And look, even the other side, I think, agrees that there's a truth to it. It's just that ultimately there is a realm of deciding even in face of the knowledge.
Right, I guess. So basically, the other side seems to be that temptation can still...
Yes, could blind your knowledge. Yeah, that's the question. Right, could temptation temporarily block you from your knowledge? That's the machlokas, right? According to Plato's way, temptation can't block you from your knowledge. It could block you from getting the knowledge in the first place, but like once you have the knowledge, you have the knowledge, and temptation can't blind you. According to Aristotle, even if you have the knowledge clear, the temptation could blind you, close you off, and change the knowledge and throw you off. That's ultimately what it comes down to.
According to Aristotle, like the... Does he also maintain that knowledge is always primary? And if you have that idea clear, it's like it never falters. It never.
No, Aristotle's once saying that it could corrupt you. No, the knowledge, I think, is clear.
Not because of temptation per se. But
yeah, I think so. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not an expert in Plato and Aristotle, but my understanding is not a difference in what knowledge is. He agrees that knowledge is clear, and you can have a clear idea. It's just the question is, could it become corrupted? At least momentarily, by the instinct. You know, it's like, maybe this is a way to say it. As according to Plato, the temptation takes advantage of your blind spots. You know, of the areas where you don't have knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas according to Aristotle, it actually creates blind spots.
Mm-hmm.
But then why would, like, in terms of, like, the Plato argument, why would there be all these fences set up in Judaism, like a mechitza, and men shouldn't sit with women.
Most people don't have knowledge. You know, but this is an idealized concept. But most people aren't at the level where they have that type of knowledge. You know?
Uh-huh. But I mean, that's maintaining that this concept that Gemara is talking about, the Torah is, you know, protective, is a very...
Well, again, to the degree which it's true, it's true. I mean, there is a truth to it, even if it's not absolute until you have the full knowledge. I think it, to the degree that you have knowledge, it protects you. You know?
It's not, knowledge of, you know, let's say, eating, keep saying the cheeseburger, eating treif. Is it knowledge of that you should not eat treif? And it's very crystal clear that a dairy piece of cheese on beef...
Does
it mean like the consequences? Like,
well, it means, yeah, that as much as pleasure, like, it's ultimately like you understand why you're pursuing cheeseburgers, you understand why what pleasure does for you, you understand the role which pleasure contributes to the good, your good in life, and you understand the role which knowledge and following God has, you know, plays in your life, and, you know, something like that. Like, it's like you have a full picture of the importance of rankings of different things in your life, and you understand what's drawing you to it, and you understand how that pleasure is only going to be short-lived, and how ultimately after you indulge in that pleasure, you're going to feel like a garbage afterwards, and in the long term it's going to make you frustrated, and it's going to take you further from God, and you're like, I don't know, it's like a whole worldview. And you also understand how it could convince you at the moment, and you realize that you have knowledge of your psyche, the way your psyche feels at the moment when the instinct is kicked up, and you understand the nature of that state, and they're able to identify it clearly because you know that that's a fake, which your own mind, the trick that your mind plays on you. You know, so there's like various levels of knowledge. And then you also know the tricks that your psyche plays on you and says, oh, don't worry, it's just this one time, or don't worry, I'm just doing, I don't know, whatever excuses you, if there's the knowledge of those. Yeah, there's like there are levels of knowledge. I mean, it's complex. That's the point. It's not just a simple thing, oh, yeah, I know it's bad for me. There's the various levels of the conflict and the knowledge, you know, you have to really know it to death, if you so to speak.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about like an overall approach to fate?
No, I don't know. I think it's going to be both. It's going to be both. I mean, I think there's different types of knowledge. You could have knowledge which would involve fate, which is more generic. Mm-hmm. But I would think that you also have to involve knowledge about your psyche a little bit. The particular draws which it has on you. You know, you can know true Torah is good, but is it good even if I'm going to have to control myself? And how much will be worth it for me to close my eyes for a little bit, and you know, maybe I'll benefit, and it'll give me more happiness or more good, or you know. Mm-hmm. Like a person might think that if they say, like a person could know that let's say cheating in business ultimately won't pay off. You know, you could like know that idea clearly. You could see it, but like at the moment, you have to really see that, how that strategy is going to lead to your demise. I don't know. You know, it's like really Mishlei type of thinking. It's like to think through the consequences and having a full appreciation of all the different decisions which you make in your life and the different potential consequences. And you know, things are not always, you know, you make these errors in judgment. There are a lot of errors in judgment that people often make, which you don't realize. And through gaining a knowledge of that, it could help.
I guess fundamentally, does instinct ever control the psyche?
Yeah, the mind. Right. Does it overpower?
Mind, achieve that.
Right, the highest knowledge, right. Could it melt your mind? Yes. Or is it a get around the gaps in your mind? Right, exactly. Does it take advantage of the gaps in your knowledge, or does it undermine your knowledge? Right. And that's basically the question, is does Torah protect you from sin? Because Torah is knowledge, and does knowledge prevent you from sinning? Or you say, look, it can't prevent you because even if you have the knowledge, the instincts that threw them off.
I mean, I could see, like, you could try to prevent being in situations where you might
succumb,
but if you're in that situation,
I
don't know. That,
no. Right, yeah, it's a good point. Is that if you maintain like Aristotle, so then sometimes the battle is what you're supposed to do. So oftentimes the battle is, don't get into the situation where the instinct is aroused. Don't go into that restaurant where they have whatever. Don't put the potato chips on the table. Don't whatever. Don't go into the room with a woman. Don't whatever. Like sometimes that's before the instinct is aroused. So that's arguably the time to win the battle. Because sometimes if you get into that situation, I mean, look, maybe that situation you have free will. You know, your instinct could overpower you, but you could choose not to. But better option is not to get into that situation in the first place, because those situations are where the instinct is.
To the extent you could have predicted that you'd be in that situation.
Yes. Yes, but usually you could. You just you let your guard down because, whatever. It's like, you know, I'm not doing it. I'm just getting the situation. So you feel that's not the sin. That's not the thing I don't want to do. But, like, you don't realize the tricks. These are the tricks which your psyche plays on you. Yeah. Okay, so why don't we stop here? I know there's a lot more. We still have to do the other things.
Very interesting. It's complicated.
Yeah. There's still the other thing is whether or not mitzvos protect you after you sin, right? Let me just think how long it'll take to do that. The other argument is, do mitzvahs protect you while you're sinning? Right? I'm sorry, while you're doing the mitzvah, does that protect you from sinning? while you're doing the mitzvah. That's the other facet of the argument.
Well, we said yes, because you're...
Yes, that was one side. That was what Rava held. Oh, okay. But Rav Yosef held. But Rava holds nacho. He holds even while you're doing the mitzvah, it doesn't protect you.
That would assume that you're sinning while you're doing the mitzvah?
Yes. Or
so a guy could be davening and having unclean thoughts,
yes,
or something.
Right.
So, yeah, it is conceivable that would happen.
Right. But. So that's the question. Is what's the... Like, obviously, you can always have exceptions, but the question is... Arguably, the question is it within the nature of mitzvah to prevent you? To prevent you from sinning.
You wouldn't say ipso facto, if you are chote while you're doing a mitzvah, then you must not be really fulfilling the mitzvah properly.
Maybe. Or maybe, you know.
If you're mentally involved in the mitzvah too, not just doing it, you know, if you're mentally involved, I don't see how you could be sinning at the same time.
Yeah, but maybe your instinct could, pull a fast one on you. And then if you want...
the person gets distracted. I mean, and there's sort of intentional, you know, there's like leaving yourself open to distraction, and there's sometimes just whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, if you want, I could tell you, I had two ideas for this. I was never had one idea, I had a different one. You want to hear, or should we leave it till next time?
I would like to, unless everybody's tired.
You up?
Yeah.
Okay. So Rabbi Zimmer wanted to say the following. He wanted to say that it's a cycle. It's a question about the instincts of a person. How do the instincts of a person operate, if you will? Is it pshat that, like, your instincts are always on 24/7? Your instincts are always churning away, pushing. What do you say no? Is that it's like when a person is free, like when you're bored, like, you know, you're sitting around, that's not good for a person. Like, as I'll say, like, batala leads a person to doing bad things, you know. Sitting around, it's like when your mind is unoccupied, when your energies are free, then your instincts get it, you know, jump in. Okay? Or do you say your instincts are like always running 24/7 and you might be doing other stuff or whatever, but like they're always there running in the background, you know? Or are the instincts like you're doing other stuff and the instincts are busy, you know, they're distracted, if you will. And then it's when you turn off, that's when the instincts jump in, right? So if you say that the instincts are always running, then I don't care if you're doing a mitzvah. If the instinct, you know, something pops into your head, you see something, whatever it is, boom, that's it. Right? Or do you say it's like the nature of the instincts is such is that when the person is active, engaged in other things which are non-instinctual. So it could be if you're engaged in an instinct itself, like money, I don't know, maybe then your instincts are aroused. But if you're engaged in something like mitzvah, which is like a non-instinctual activity, it's an activity which is the world of ideas, so then the instinct isn't on. So it will protect you from sin because it's like you're in a different place. You're in a different mind space. Because you're not in the instincts. But if you learn the instincts are always on, well then, it may be less likely to get you because you're busy. But like bottom line is, the instincts are always running.
Right.
Right. So I wanted to argue that even you could argue no. Really, I want to say both sides agree the instincts are always on.
Mm-hmm.
The question is do you say that it's part of the design of mitzvos to sublimate your instincts? Sublimate your instincts means it's like mitzvahs are physical actions which are designed in line with man's instincts, and like when you're doing a mitzvah, it like engages, it grabs your psychological energy, and
it suppresses the instincts.
The technical word is like sublimated. It directs it towards a kosher place, so to speak. So like it engages the psychic energy and the instinctual energy in a positive way. And thereby, it like siphons off the energy. It like satisfies your, let's say like you're eating matzah. So it's like you're eating, satisfying your energies. And therefore you're not going to be eating treif because it's satisfying. It's like your instincts become satisfied in a more abstract type of way. You know, so there's like a kind of psychological concept of sublimation where it's like you take a base instinct and convert it into a more sublime, you know, or abstract type of, but it still satisfies the instinct. So do you say mitzvahs are designed to draw in the instinctual energy? And if so, then it will protect you from sinning because your psychical energy is already being satisfied in this or directed towards this area? Or do you say that's not part of the design of mitzvahs? Mitzvahs are mitzvahs, and mitzvahs might sometimes do that, but that's not part of the construct of mitzvahs. If you say that's like part of the way mitzvahs are designed to do that to your instincts, well then when you do a mitzvah, it protects you from sinning. But if you say mitzvahs are good for lots of reasons, but that's not part of the... That's like a theory. You might say it. You might suggest that's part of the design of mitzvahs. You might say, no. Learning is, you know, does that.
Well, I remember one of the first things I learned, we learned, I don't know if it was just you and me or together,
right,
like years ago, was, and I remember even with Danielle's bat mitzvah speech, right, you know, I mean, like, that man has a dual nature.
Yeah.
So I thought the reason why do we have laws of kashrus?
Right.
Does it really matter if we eat meat and cheese?
Right.
It's to always have an intellectual component before we do an animalistic kind of thing.
Yes.
So I thought, by definition, not about every mitzvah, but many, if not all mitzvahs, are in fact designed for that reason.
Yes. Yes, but I'm saying is, like, you could argue that even though mitzvah you think when you do it, it also, like, engages your physical energy in a way that it, like, it caters to your psychological needs such that while you're doing the mitzvah, your psyche is satisfied. And
so
therefore
you
you're not going
to
say, right, exactly. Is that, like, part of the design of mitzvahs, so that they're constructed in a way that like talks to your psyche and drains, pulls your energy in, so that you, while you're doing it, it's not going to work afterwards. After you finish doing it, you're going to go back to the sinning because it doesn't really give you knowledge. But you could argue that it's designed in a way that will draw your energy.
Does anybody like does?
That's what I'm saying is the argument. I don't know. That's what I'm suggesting is the argument between them.
Like,
you know what I'm saying? Well, that's what they're arguing. The facts of the argument is: does the person sin? Does mitzvah protect you from sin? What I'm saying is that's what it's psychological. That's I'm claiming that's what they're.
Oh, I see. I got you.
You know, like you'll say, like a person has like some sort of a thing, like I don't know, their moods or whatever. Go jogging. Like, what does jogging do? I don't know. Like, if you have your confusing psychological stuff, sometimes exercising somehow redirects your energy and draws it. Getting aggressive motion, whatever, sometimes helps a person redirect their energies. So I'm saying it's like you could argue mitzvahs is part of the design of mitzvahs is to work with the person's psyche. You know.
I got it. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I'd like to listen to Rabbi
Moskowitz.
Moskowitz, at least once, just be a really unique.
Yes, approach. Very, very unique. Very interesting. He's very entertaining speaker also.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he on the?
I'm sure he's there. Yeah. If you search his name, you'll find him. I don't know if there's like a best cheer to listen to.
Maybe look at the old. The classic.
Yeah. Maybe I'll ask someone.
I mean the old zip.
I'll ask someone. I know.
My chay keeps zipping.
Yeah,
the
yeah. There's a guy in yeshiva who's a student of his. If I ask him for like a best of or a Moskowitz, he'll probably give me one or two shiur.
Yeah,
I'll try to do that.
On that.
Yeah.
Have you heard of
Walsh? I actually learned with him once when I was in Seattle.
He has a cool book actually.
But
if you want to read it, he has like
a
book like of these like 2-page like. Stories. There, it's clever. I'll send it to you. Yeah, it's a PDF. It's a file. I'll send it to you.
Oh yeah.
It's like a 60-page book or whatever, you know.
Okay.
But I think you'll enjoy it. It's clever. It's entertaining also.
Is he one of Rabbi Chait's?
Yeah. Well, he's like his friend. He's his age.
Oh.
They learned together. They were whatever, you know. But he's Talmud friend, you know. He lives in Seattle. He's older.
Oh, I see. Rabbi Chait, by the way, was at the last week.
Yeah.
And it was sad to see, like, he's definitely his illness is definitely manifesting in a way that's
It depends on the day, though. Some days are good, some days are much better than others. Go ahead, Moshe.
I guess I'm just wondering, like, you know, so there's no empirical indication that, like, you know, like,
I mean,
according to the theory that okay, so if a person's involved in the mitzvah, then they're not.
Again, I think you have to say, like, these things aren't foolproof. You see, for Achdogantov, you can say those exceptions, but the question is that part of the design of mitzvah to do that? Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it's foolproof, and you definitely could have exceptions, you know, whatever, but is that one of the qualities of mitzvah that it protects you from sin?
But then you say there's a side that says no. It's just not part of the...
Yeah, I mean, maybe it happens to happen sometimes, but that's not part of the design of mitzvah. It's a question about mitzvah. Is that part of the design of mitzvahs to do that?
That's the nature of the mitzvah.
Like it's one of those.
Whether it'll have that effect?
Yeah, no, it was designed that way. I mean, maybe sometimes it could coincidentally have that effect, but that is that part of the design of mitzvahs.
So they don't, I mean, is there any disagreement what the effect of that is?
Yeah, I would think so. I would think that in general, well, I don't know if you could do a study.
You know, the general effect of mitzvahs is that...
Yeah, let's say if it's designed that way. Yeah, right, right.
No.
Yeah, let's say I'd say if it's designed that way, then I'd say there's going to be, let's say, an 8% chance higher of doing sinning when you do a mitzvah or not. So what are you going to do a study? What's the baseline? Controlled study? I don't know if there's like a way to actually make a statistical study on it, because it's not foolproof. So you have to theorize and think into what is that, based upon your knowledge of mitzvahs, is that part of the design of the mitzvah or not? I don't know how exactly you're going to solve that.
No, it just seems, it sounds strange that, so there's a position that just the design of the mitzvah is not really does not have an effect on the instincts when a person's involved in it.
Yeah, I mean, that's not what mitzvahs are. I mean, that's not the essence of what mitzvahs are, I don't think. I mean, mitzvahs are to engage you in ideas and, whatever mitzvahs are, but I don't know if it's to siphon off your psychal energy while you're doing it. It's to, like, you know, to bring you towards good ideas.
But isn't a core value, I mean, I don't know the term, but...
I mean, these are the facts. The facts are, is do mitzvahs prevent you from sinning?
Mm-hmm.
Or not? Right? Those are the facts. So...
Doing a mitzvah prevents while you're sinning doing regarding the, yeah, while, that particular...
No, mitzvah. While you're doing the mitzvah, does it prevent you from sinning?
Yeah, okay.
But like, just like a mitzvah doing a mitzvah of lulav, lulav isn't designed to make you not have, you know, impure thoughts about a woman. That's not the mitzvah of lulav. Mitzvah of lulav is to engage you in giving shavach l'asha.
Right.
Now, will doing that prevent you from sinning? Is that the design of it to do so?
Right.
I don't know. That's not what mitzvahs are.
There's no. It's not like mitzvahs are to take you away from chayv per se. It's,
no, right. It's that's, right. It's me engaged in positive. Mitzvah. Right. Exactly. But now you could say that look, in the Shorosh mitzvahs. There's a lot of different ideas in mitzvahs. Mm-hmm. Is this one of them? Is that one of them that they're constructed in a way? The pratim of mitzvahs, all the details and whatever, are constructed in a way with human psyche in mind, in a way that will siphon off your energy from areas of chayv. prevent you from sinning. It's an interesting theory that might be the case, but I don't know. How do you answer that question? Is that really part of the design of mitzvahs? I guess you have to know a lot about the psyche and a lot about mitzvahs. Try to understand, is that part of the design of mitzvahs? I don't know if it's going to come through an empirical study about how often people sin when they're doing a mitzvah. I'm not sure how you would do that and you know the baseline, but you have to study the human psyche and study mitzvahs and the structure of mitzvahs and you know, see whether or not that's part of their design or not. Yeah. All right, so there's some other parts in this Gemara which maybe we may or may not take up next week, but this is just halfway through the Gemara, basically. You know, there's a lot of interesting stuff here. Yeah.
I'm curious, is there anybody, like, not even Moshe Rabbeinu, right, that ever achieved Torah perfection where there was...
Even Moshe Rabbeinu sinned.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the Pasuk says. It's Pasuk again, I forget where. Ein tzaddik ba'aretz, v'asher yaseh tov le'echta. There's no tzaddik in the world who does good and never sins.
Where's that Pasuk?
I forget. Kohelas, I think. Ask Mom, Michelle, now. Or I could look it up. Ein tzaddik ba'aretz. Just search the Sephardia. Ein tzaddik ba'aretz. If you want to find it. I think it's Kohelas. Yeah. All right.
This was very interesting,
Yeah.
It's always interesting. It's particularly good.